Hey everyone, thanks for checking out SMQB's episode 183. When we finished recording tonight, we heard about the death of Pete Rose, and so I wanted to just take a couple minutes. Obviously, Charlie Hustle, as he was known, has a complicated legacy in baseball, but he had a career. The numbers are unbelievable. He finished with 4,256 hits, most in MLB history. Only him and Ty Cobb are over 4,000 hits in their career. He also holds records for games played, plate appearances, and at-bats. He was a three-time batting title champion, had a couple gold gloves. He was an MVP in 1973. He also spent 7 years as a Reds manager. Of course, he ended up banned from baseball for life when he was caught up in a betting scandal. So Rose never did get into the Hall of Fame. Obviously, there's more to talk about there. But for Knight, it's the end of a legacy. Pete Rose passing away at age 83. Of course, we also lost Dikembe Mutombo today. We talked about that on the pod. Thanks for listening to us. Check us out. Give us 5 stars. And we'll talk more about Pete Rose on the next show. People, dancing on the people right now. Everybody in the booth can tell myself apart from you. SMQB's episode 183. Hail to the. No, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going there. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. No, I'm not doing it. Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
Before we get there, Bison, who's in first place in the NFC East?
Oh, well, that would be the Commanders, of course. We all knew that was going to. That's exactly where we thought we'd be after 4 games.
I am taking to the bar. I'm going to go to New York City for this and go to my favorite Irish pub near Madison Square Garden. And I'm going to take Hal Steinbrenner, who apparently has been buddying up to Juan Soto. And I'm going to tell him, for God's sakes, please re-sign this guy. Don't be stupid. I mean, he's the future of the team. We have to have him.
You do have to have him.
Hard to argue. I hope you don't. That. Yeah.
Milk, what about you?
You know, a year ago, you guys would have laughed at me if I took this gentleman to a bar, but I'm going to take Sam Darnold. I am in shock at what I am seeing. Yesterday, 20 of 28, 275 yards, 3 touchdowns. 4 games in now, this is a hell of a resurgence. And I'd like to treat him to a drink. Vikings are for real.
4 games in, he's looking like an MVP candidate.
Yeah, he's looking like
the Baker Mayfield resurgence.
It's unreal. Pope, what about you?
I'm taking a head coach of the SMU Mustangs, Rhett Lashley, to the bar.
Nice win.
To congratulate him on a big win. We'll talk about that later. But also to get him fired up for the game on Saturday against Louisville. It is, according to the schedule, the last game against a ranked opponent that SMU plays this year, because they play a weak-ass ACC schedule. No Clemson or Miami.
Interesting. Interesting that Pope is talking more about SMU now.
Yeah.
He hasn't talked about SMU in 3 years on this podcast.
Interesting. I am bringing one Cliff Kingsbury to the bar.
Yeah, Coach Bro.
Because he went back to the team that canned him and absolutely kicked their ass. So, and not only that, wow, what a job he's done with Jaden Daniels, bringing him along up to this point. So a lot of football left, but he's earned a drink on me at the bar this week. Let's get into it. Let's get into week 4. Rooster, what do we got to talk about?
First question. Who gets fired first, Doug Peterson or Nick Sirianni?
I mean, Doug Peterson, right?
Jags are 0-4 in a division.
They look lost. They look lost, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could see the team maybe is going to start to quit too. Like, I mean, look, yesterday in Tampa, and I could say this with Hal Snot on, was an ass kicking. But I will say also that they did not have their 1 and 2 wide receiver. So it'd be like the bike side.
Or their right tackle. Or
their best offensive lineman, right?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have our We didn't have our linemen either, right? Or a safety. So, you know, we all had injuries. But if we had played that game without Evans and Godwin, it probably would have ended differently. So I don't know. Sirianni's safe to me.
We also don't have Saquon.
He had a nice run, but other than that, Vita Vase stuffed him.
So week four, we're down to two, possibly three undefeateds, depending on what happens tonight with Seattle, who's 3-0. Who would have guessed that the undefeateds outside of the Chiefs would be the Vikings and maybe the Seahawks at this point? Crazy.
Crazy. I mean, listen, on the Vikings, I said it last week, I'm going to keep preaching. Kevin O'Connell, man, you got to give that guy unbelievable credit for what he's done. And it just keeps on going.
Well, they look like they're going to roll. I think they're going to win next week, too. They're going to. They look strong. Their running game is really good. Their passing game's outstanding, and their defense may be better than all of the above.
Right, right. And they get the Jets.
Yeah, which the Jets are in a fucking free fall for some reason. They had one good game this season, and now they look like shit. What happened? Their line can't stop anyone. They've got this old man running around for his life back there.
Rooster, you know what happened.
They're right? The Jets. That's what happened.
Jets are the Jets, right?
And Aaron wants to be the coach. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, well, every time he opens his mouth, I hate him more.
Yeah. Talk about, you know who should be on the hot seat is the Jets coach.
Salah.
Yeah, Salah. Yeah. I mean,
especially if he didn't mend his fits with Aaron.
He's a perfect example of what I've been talking about recently. Damn good defensive coordinator, terrible head coach. Get him back where he belongs and stop embarrassing yourself as a head coach. He's terrible. And the worst, you know what? The worst of the worst always are exposed by that HBO show, Hard Knocks. He looked terrible on that show last year. The Giants' entire staff did this year. They all have to go.
I have a question. How bad are the Browns?
Well, you're Browns about to find out.
They're horrendous.
It's bad.
It's pretty bad, right? I heard that this is like the worst offensive four-game stretch that they've ever had. And you think like back to some of the teams that the Browns have had. I mean, that's pretty awful, isn't it? Like the Browns are really bad all the time. Look, and this is the worst.
After the Colts beat the Steelers yesterday, do you have any doubt that if the Browns still had Flacco, they'd be playing a whole lot better?
I mean, Flacco, that's unbelievable.
You would think.
Deshaun, do you know what his QBR was yesterday? 36. Oh, no, Deshaun Watson's 36.
What? Something's happened to that guy. Did, he's no longer the player that he used to be.
They did get screwed. I don't know if y'all watched the red zone or the game at all, but they did get screwed. They had a long touchdown pass to Amari Cooper called back on a total bullshit holding call.
Okay, well, you're defending an Alabama player, clearly.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying the Browns arguably should have beat the Raiders yesterday. That was bullshit.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. He still had a terrible game, though.
He still looked terrible.
Agreed.
He may have had one good pass, but he looked terrible. I don't think he's ever going to get it back. I don't know why, but he just doesn't look like it's in him anymore. Bryson, you have to talk about the Commanders. I will pat myself on the back and say I thought they'd be good this year. And I said that on this pod, but Jesus.
Well,
you have
my two futures bets on Daniels as offensive rookie of the year and the Commanders to make the playoffs are feeling okay right now.
Yeah.
A lot of football left. Listen, I mean I don't really know what to say. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to act. I feel like something bad is going to happen at any moment now. But Jaden Daniels, he's the real deal. He's just, I don't know, four games in, and I think he's got more scoring drives than incompletions or something. I mean, it's wild.
He's just playing with so much confidence.
He's completing 82% of his passes after 4 weeks. That's unheard.
That's absurd, by the way.
And you've seen him. I don't know if they're opening the playbook up. I mean, I thought week one against Tampa, they didn't do anything. I mean, he was running the whole time. It really didn't seem like they gave him a chance to throw. And I don't know if that was just the first game for him, but I mean, he's made some throws yesterday. You know, they highlighted this one, the touchdown to Ertz on the broadcast, where he just let it rip to a spot in the back of the end zone. And I mean, Ertz came out behind like three guys to catch it. It was a big time throw, because he wasn't throwing to an open guy. He was throwing to an open spot on the field. And I mean, he's got a cannon of an arm, and he seems to make the right decisions when he puts the ball down and runs. I mean, he picked up first downs. He didn't run that much yesterday. He looks like he has everything under control.
And the running game is league leading as well, for some reason, with Brian Robinson. In some statistical areas, not all, but
yeah.
But what I don't get is where did this defense come from that we saw yesterday?
Well, I think some of that might be the Cardinals.
You think?
Right.
Well, they've been playing well.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's defense has always been better in their offense lately.
Yeah, but not lately.
Well, here's what I'll say.
They gave away half their defenders.
And I think you're seeing the benefit of that, honestly. You know, the way they played yesterday, Kyler didn't have any big scrambles, right? When he got pressure, I mean, I think they had 5 sacks yesterday. Maybe it was 4, but, you know, last year with Sweat and Chase Young on the ends, guys who I liked, but with them on the ends, they would have been going for sacks every down, and Kyler would have gotten outside the edge and been able to take off. And maybe what you're seeing is a defense that doesn't have a lot of huge superstars on it, and you've got guys who know how to play their role and do what they're supposed to do, because you didn't see him have a chance at getting outside the pocket yesterday and taking off. So I think maybe the unit is just playing as a team right now. And you know what? They're going to get another chance next week to play well against the not very good offense. So, you know, it that helps you get there. But, you know, you got guys like Bobby Wagner in the middle. I mean, I think that's a big plus as far as, you know, getting people in the right position, making the right calls and running the right plays.
Yeah.
Are the Commanders the best team in the East? Yes or no?
Yes.
Right now they are.
Yes. Wow. Changing of the guard.
I'm not necessarily saying it's a changing of the guard because the Eagles are hurt. But right now the Commanders are the best team in the East.
The eye test.
Monta Smith come back. We'll see. And the O-line gets healthy with the Eagles. We shall see.
But certainly the eye test is they are.
I still think the defense is going to get exposed. I don't think the defense is that good. And I also think Daniels is going to have a game where, you know, he throws 3 picks and fumbles in the end zone or something like that, just because he's a rookie.
But you're at least a year ahead of what you thought would be.
Yeah. Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah.
You might be 4-1 in a week from today.
Yep.
So
Here's a good question I've got for you when looking in the Commanders. What do these guys all have in common? Baker Mayfield, Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Caleb Williams, and Jaden Daniels.
Heisman.
Coach Bro. Oh. I undervalued how much Coach Bro would bring to developing Jaden Daniels. Think about it. He was head coach of Baker Mayfield and Mahomes. He worked obviously with Kyler Murray as head coach at Arizona, and when he went to USC, he worked with Caleb Williams. So
yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, to Rooster's point, probably one of the best points of the year so far is these coordinators who failed as head coaches in NFL are really making a difference.
But you have to say that Jaden Daniels, after 4 games, and it may be because of his age, but he looks like he's a year or two ahead of Caleb Williams in terms of being NFL ready.
I think there's something, I think you're right on about the age thing. I mean, he played 55 games in college. That's a lot of football. There's very few, you know, top draft pick quarterbacks who come out who have played that many games in college, right? I mean, that's a lot. 55 college games.
Yeah. And what conference was he in? Sorry.
Just well, he started in.
You can remind everyone.
he started in what, the Pac-12, right?
Jaden Daniels? I don't know. I don't know where he started.
Arizona State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It wasn't very long there, though.
I don't know, but he definitely finished at the SEC. So
good work, Mill. Got to work that SEC football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pope and that's our job.
Pope and I watched the Giants-Cowboys game together Thursday night. And, you know, you kind of expected that game to be lousy. And it was. But, man, the game of the week was supposed to be the Packers and the Vikings. And, you know, I think that lived up to it. The Vikings beat yet another good team. I mean, the Packers are a good team. And once Jordan Love got the, you know, the rust off of him, he started putting up some big time numbers. I think he threw for over 300 and something yards and threw maybe three touchdowns.
And weren't the Vikings up 28-0 on that in that game?
Yeah.
It took a while.
They were taking the Alabama woodshed to him in the first half, and then the Packers just played desperate, and you know, Love amassed a ton of yards, just like you said.
I mean, now they've Madison back and healthy. I mean, that's a potent offense.
I want to go back to that Thursday game for a second, and not just because teams suck, but I mean, those Thursday games rarely are exciting, good games. Is it really just that these guys are so beat down that they need those two extra days to get healthy so that you can see good quality football? It's a really short week, right?
You know,
the Bucks have to play Thursday.
You remember John Riggins could barely walk for a few days after every game.
Yeah.
I mean, they need those days to heal.
Yeah, I don't know why we're doing this with Thursday night football. Unless the only way you can do it, I think, is you have your bye the week before.
Or you make sure they're playing Monday. And
it's not fair for the team that goes on the road either. Like, I'm sorry. There's some sort of, I mean, they.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the Thanksgiving phenomenon. For years, that has been the case. You got a road team, but they usually get, you know, a bye to try to compensate them for that. But now it's every week we got a Thursday game. So it's really hard to do that.
Yeah, I just think it's you're not seeing good quality. The product is not what it is on Sunday ever when you watch those games. It's not a good idea.
Let's talk a little bit about last night's game, because I think that we now have a team that is 2-2 that could very well be the best team in the league.
Not surprised at all.
Yeah. I mean, they figured it out. Run Derrick Henry. Mm-mm-mm.
Pope and I talked about it 2 weeks ago that when we were talking about 0-2 teams, and like we didn't even discuss it for more than a second. We knew Baltimore was much better than that. And I'm not shocked at all. They're gonna win the division probably.
Yeah. You know? But what I think it does show you is how quick we are to anoint MVPs in the NFL. Like, everybody was talking about Josh Allen being, you know, playing at such a high level and you know, calling the coverages or the you know, the pass protections and calling the plays and, you know, just playing it at an uber high level and clearly was going to be the MVP. And then, you know, they score 10 points. It's just funny. The NFL is wild. I mean, easy come, easy go, right?
Week to week, right?
Yeah.
At this point in the season, after four games, how many points, what do you think the point differential is between the Chiefs and the Ravens, and who has more?
I heard some wild stat about the Chiefs that they've won 14 games in a row or something by a collective 60 points.
The Chiefs have
90, I believe it.
The Chiefs have 92 total points scored. The Ravens have 106.
The Chiefs could be 0-4, guys.
I'm sort of shocked.
The Texans have 79, and they're 3-1.
Yeah,
the Ravens are putting it together now, man, and they're scary good.
And I mean, there's worries in Kansas City. Rice is now gone.
Yeah.
Hey, karma's a bitch. Like I said,
yeah,
he shouldn't have been playing this year.
They have a rookie and a bunch of kind of below average receivers now that they're left with. Is Hollywood Brown coming back anytime soon? I don't know.
Derrick Henry, by the way, I mean, that guy is still running away from defensive backs.
His
It's wild. I mean, first of all, isn't he like 30 years old at this point? And
250 something.
And it's been the most bruising back in football for a while. I mean, he takes hits and he just runs away from the D-backs. He's just flat faster than them.
That run that he had to open up the game for them, that was like 80 yards. The whatever speed they clocked him at was like the second or third fastest in the league.
Right. You want to see him and like Tyreek run a 40, you know, next to each other and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because somebody that big shouldn't be running that fast.
I'm not getting in front of that guy when he gets
right
ahead of speed. That's for damn sure.
He's also trucking guys, which, you know, also has a wear and tear.
Right. Yeah. Clearly not that much, though. So, okay. So what are the two biggest stories coming out? You know, here we are. Of course, we've got Monday night tonight. But what do you think are the two biggest stories in the NFL right now that you got to be talking about?
Well, I think one of them is Jaden Daniels.
I think it is too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which makes me very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable about that.
It should make me uncomfortable.
But I think it is one of the top two stories.
I think it's Jaden Daniels and Sam Darnold. I mean,
Derrick Henry. Either one.
Jaden Daniels, Sam Darnold, and the 0-4 Jags.
Yeah, and the fact that Bo Nix threw for 60 yards yesterday, which I think is a record.
It's and not a good record.
No, the Vikings are shocking. I think we were all laughing at the beginning of the year at the prospect of Sam Darnold leading that team. But here you are. It's crazy.
All right. Well.
What else we got on football?
Are we ready for Plaxico, or anyone have any more on week four?
Well, I think we're ready.
All right, I've got the list. Shockingly, House is 4-0 at this point.
That's probably the biggest story of all, even bigger than the NFL.
Having picked the Chargers +7.5 over Kansas City. Three of us picked the Rams +2.5 over the Bears and lost.
I mean, how is that possible? The Bears suck.
I know it. And then
I mean, the Rams had played really well week four. And I got to tell you, I've got a bet with my legal assistant, and she's a huge Chicago Bear fan. So stay tuned. It might get ugly.
Not only that, but how many of you went in on Bison's bet picking the Rams and the over?
Yeah.
Ouch.
That didn't work out.
Only it was the over on the Vikings, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We hit the over.
Hit the over and lost the Rams.
The Rams were the one that
Milk lost, taking the Steelers -2 versus the Colts, who lost their starting quarterback and nonetheless won the game.
And I still don't understand how they didn't win.
I know. That's not how the Milk, Bison, and I are 2-2.
Sounds about right.
Leads the pack at 4-0, and our last year's champion is still
fucking
up the tail end there.
Yeah, kind of like the Jags.
Come on, Pope, that means you go.
I feel good.
Did you say
the Jags?
Kind of feels like it. Like 0-4, 1-3. All right. I for the life of me can't understand this line. How is Washington only giving 3 to one of the worst teams in the league? But I will take Washington -3 at home against Cleveland. Come on.
Sign me up. I'm in. Same bet. Commanders all the way.
I think we should all go in on the Commanders.
I love this bet. -3?
How's that possible?
At home?
But there's one other game I like too, but I didn't take
Bison,
it.
Bison, are you going to get on with your home team?
No. I'm not going to do that. No, hell no. I'm taking the Niners, 7.5. I just watched the Cardinals play.
Ooh, that's a big line.
It's a big line, but I think the 49ers are going to smash them.
All right.
Well, House and I are both taking the Vikings -2.5 against the ETS Jets.
Yes. That's the other one. Okay. Come on.
Ooh, now where is that game? That's in London?
It's in Minnesota. Oh, well.
No, it's
in London.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah,
Okay. Yeah. Well,
interesting.
Isn't Aaron dinged up? Is he playing?
I think he's playing, but their line looks like Swiss cheese again. So the line
he hurt. He was limping at the end of the game.
Ooh,
that's all right. We need a parlay.
No, definitely don't keep it to yourself this week. I don't want to hear it.
I think, Milk, what do you think of the Bucks over in the Bucks Falcons game, the over of 43.5 plus the Vikings giving 2.5?
I like that. My only concern is the Thursday night. I'm so mad this game is happening on Thursday and we have to go on the road. It's just going to kill our momentum. But
Baker looks good, man. He is playing really well.
The Falcons should not have won the game against
the
Saints.
Division games on the road are hard always.
But we're just taking the over. Do you think they get to 43?
I like the over. I like the over. The Falcons can score points. That's a good bet.
All right, a $20 bet on that gets you $72.89 at the end. So
nice.
Okay. All right. Mark it down. I'm locking it in right now.
Yep, I got it. All right.
Let's go.
All right. Anything else on the NFL? We got to do a quick MLB postseason discussion here. And yeah, I mean, we're in the midst of breaking news on that, I guess. So let's say right now what we've got is the Braves and the Mets are in game two. By the time this airs, we'll know who won. Yep. But they're in the bottom of the third. The Braves are up 1-0. The Braves need to win to get in.
Okay.
If they lose, the Mets, Pope, correct me if I'm wrong, the Mets get the 5 seed and the Diamondbacks go in as the 6 seed.
Nerds, Diamondbacks, number 6.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks are sitting home watching, and they need the Mets to win this game.
They need the Mets to win. The Braves win, the D-backs
the Braves are in. Yeah,
D-backs are out. The D-backs needed a sweep one way or the other. Now they're huge Mets fans.
Yeah. Ooh. And by the way, it was a pretty pretty intense game one of the doubleheader. Pope, tell us kind of what happened there, what the swings were.
Braves took the lead at the bottom of the eighth. Albies almost hit a grand slam, but he cleared the bases, so they got up 7-6 going into the top of the ninth. And blown save. I don't even remember who hit the home run, but 2-run jack. Braves lose 8-7.
Lindor.
It was a Lindor.
Francisco Lindor. Yeah. Yeah. So here's what we've got right now going into the postseason, and we've got the wild card round that I guess starts tomorrow. And it's the first game is Detroit at Houston. Okay. So that's the 6-3 seed in the AL. And then you've got the Orioles versus the Royals. Orioles are the 4 seed. And that game's at 4:00 tomorrow. And then we'll go to whoever, you know, we still don't know on the National League side exactly what it's going to be. It's either going to be the Mets versus Milwaukee, or I guess the Mets versus San Diego, I guess, depending on what happens. So, and then the other team is either Arizona or Atlanta. We just don't know. We don't know who's in yet. So the National League side, as of recording right now, is not settled. But these are quick. These are 3-game series. So we start on Saturday with the divisional series. And in the AL, we've got the Yankees with the 1 seed and the Guardians with the 2 seed. In the National League, we've got the Dodgers with the 1 seed and the Phillies with the 2 seed. Guys,
and these are what? Best of what? 3?
Best of 3. Well, all played then, at the home, at the top seeds home.
Top there.
Yeah. Best of 7, right? The next two are both best of 7. The world's got to be rooting for the Dodgers and the Yankees, right?
And we're tied 1-1 Braves Mets.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh, okay.
Live action.
I know House is certainly not going to appreciate the wanting to see the Dodgers and the Yankees. But with the seasons, the historic seasons that Ohtani and Judge and arguably Judge and Soto as a pair put up, you really want to see that. Isn't that what you want to see in the series?
I do.
I know you do.
We have a good record against the Dodgers in the World Series.
When's the last time they played in the World Series? The 70s?
Probably when Mr. October made a name for himself.
Huh.
Steve Yeager, Davey Lopes, all those guys.
Yeah.
It would be pretty cool. The back and forth, the coastal.
Yeah.
I would be, it would be the highest ranked World Series. It'd have to be, you would think.
I'll tell you what, there are a few teams right now I would not want to be playing in the wild card. The Tigers are hot, and yep, the pitching is astounding. The Padres are hot and have more talent than most teams in the league. They're finally playing like they do. And the Orioles are just a damn good team.
Yeah,
that's an exciting series, Royals and Orioles.
With Witt and and the O's. Rooster, I think you said the key word though when you were talking about the Tigers being hot right now. You know, if let's say the Mets win and go in, I mean they are playing, they're on fire right now, right? And that's where you want to be. Yeah. I mean that is almost better than having the bye. Except for the fact that with the bye, you get to get your pitching lined up the way you want it. But man, give me a hot team going into the playoffs to wreck someone else's postseason.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Royals, you know, I know everyone thinks Witt makes up for a lot of problems on that team, but they are cold right now. They've really kind of struggled finishing the season.
Yep. I mean, the hottest team going in terms of win streak is Orioles. They've won three in a row. That's okay.
Yeah, it does matter. It's gonna be fun. We'll cover this a little more, I think, next week when we know a little bit. You know, we don't even have the whole format set yet, the whole bracket set at this point.
One last question. Last year there were two wild cards that went to the World Series, Braves and D-backs. Rangers and D-backs. Do you see a wild card?
You couldn't even hope.
Unbelievable. Little Freudian slip. Do you see a wild card there this year that could go to the World Series?
Orioles. Sure.
Astros.
No, Astros are a division winner. They're just the third one.
Yeah. From
a true wild card.
All right, Orioles.
Yeah,
I think Padres.
Padres.
I think Orioles were Padres.
The Padres played pretty well to get in too. The Padres
would not shock me if the Orioles got past the Yankees.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They play well against the Yankees.
You don't want to do a division
now
playoff series.
Now saying all that, who's got the best pitching in the postseason right now?
Phillies.
I think the Phillies do.
Phillies, Tigers.
Yeah.
I think the Phillies have the best pitching, and that is dangerous too.
Yeah, that's dangerous for a lot of reasons. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I wanted one correction here because this is live. I saw a highlight of a home run for the Mets. It's actually still 1-0 Braves in the third.
Yeah, I was waiting for that update on my phone. I didn't see it. So, all right. Anything else on baseball?
Nope. Go Yankees.
It'll be fun.
Let's stick with New York for a minute. There was a trade, an NBA trade. Rooster, how are you feeling about that?
I fucking hate this trade. That's how I'll be honest.
Oh, wow.
I don't like Cat as a player.
All right, well, first, tell our listener what the trade is.
Tell us the trade.
Okay.
So the T-Wolves traded Karl Anthony Towns, their 7-foot forward, to the Knicks for Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo and a first-round pick that the Knicks own from the Pistons. Let me just start with, we just re-signed our head coach, to a long-term deal. Tibbs, Tom Thibodeau, who used to coach Carl Anthony Towns and hated his guts. They hated each other. They couldn't stand each other for obvious reasons, because Tibbs likes these Villanova type players who are not much ego. They don't do a lot of talking and they don't make a lot of mistakes and they play their asses off. Carl, if you think of bonehead plays made by a player in the playoffs, he comes to mind first. He's the guy. He's the dumbass who makes a foul 65 feet from the hoop that was never going to affect the play and gets himself into foul trouble. And then he has this ridiculous look on his face afterwards, like it's funny to him. He's going to kill the chemistry on this beautiful team that was just like grit and guts and hustle. And now we've given up Dante, who was just our man. I mean, the fans love this guy. And we're going to get a goofball with a $60 million contract that we can't unload. I hate this. I hate this trade.
How does this happen, though? I mean, if you're saying Tibbs hated this guy and this isn't the mold that he likes.
Our GM, Rose, used to be an agent. One of his clients was Carl Anthony Towns. That's
right. No. Yeah. Okay.
And
conspiracy.
We signed in the offseason a fourth Villanova guy. So the Knicks get the fourth guy, Mikal Bridges, who fits the mold. And our only problem is we couldn't afford to re-sign Hartenstein, our backup center, because our starting center, Mitch Robinson, never is healthy. And Hartenstein was like, we could have re-signed the guy for like $16 to $20 million. That's why I want to sometime get into and try to figure out the financial rules in the NBA, because they make no sense to me. It punishes successful teams who hold on to players they've developed and forces them to unload a player, because you can't re-sign Hartenstein for $16 to $20 million, but you can go do some stupid trade a few months later and get his replacement for $60 million. It makes no sense, but
yeah, that makes no sense.
We should have been able to hold on to Hartenstein, and maybe if we had to pick up a center later, because Robinson is always hurt. But I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I'm wrong. I think Carl Anthony Towns is a loser and soft and gonna be in Tibbs' doghouse very soon. And you know how the New York fans are. They're gonna run. He's also emotionally kind of brittle. They're going to break this guy and run him out of town. Mark.
Sounds great.
That's positive.
This is a positive development.
That sounds, yeah. Woof.
Good God. Well, I'm betting against the Knicks all year.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, if
Sixers
it works,
and Celtics are happy about that.
If it works, they're the number two team in the East, and actually Vegas has them as the third most likely team to win it all. But I don't believe any of that.
All right. Well, we had to mention that trade because Rooster really got under your skin. So we had to give you a chance to sound off. Guys, we didn't have it on the agenda going into today, but I do think we should mention a couple college football developments, right, around Pope's teams. Now, Pope, can you keep track of who played who? I just want to make sure we're clear.
Yeah, I think Alabama might have played against Georgia, and I think SMU played against Florida State. Any other questions?
TCU, yeah. What about TCU? What's his other team?
North Carolina lost to Duke, Texas, in a ridiculous choke job. Mac Brown should be in trouble.
Well, I want to know what your thoughts are on Bama.
Yeah.
What? I mean,
it was wild.
Defensive concerns?
Well, not in the first half. So I think there's a lot of ways to analyze the game, but I think my conclusion that there was plenty of both teams to take away good from that game, and there's plenty of rat poison for both teams, which is kind of what they wanted at the end. I mean, Kirby Smart, yeah, they came up a little short, but what an amazing comeback. I mean, they were on the ropes 28-0. It was embarrassing. Yeah. It might have had long-term consequences for them if they'd just gotten blown out by 50, but they didn't. They came back and showed, the mettle of a potential championship team. Alabama, if they had blown that game and actually lost after being up 30-7 at halftime, would have been, you know, a lot of questions would have come about Kalen and his ability to close the deal, his ability to, you know, get the team to where it needs to be ultimately. Just an unbelievable back-to-back plays, right? Because Beck completes, what, an 80-yard pass to get them to go ahead, Georgia by one. And then the next play from scrimmage, Milbro finds Ryan Williams on what lots of people have been calling one of the most amazing plays in college history as far as the way he caught the ball.
And he's a high school kid, right?
He's 17 years old.
17 years old.
How does
it? By the way, it wasn't bad defense. Like,
no,
the defense
no.
was there. Like,
no, but the way he stopped and spun, they ran in. It was like a cop, you know, comedy show. They ran into each other trying to chase him.
Yeah.
How is a 17-year-old playing that level? I mean, you know, like 17 to 19 is kind of a big age for kids. You get faster, you get, you know, stronger. Like, that's unbelievable to me that he's playing at that level and scoring the biggest touchdown of the season.
He's had a bunch of big touchdowns for this year. And Jalen Milrow, I think, with apologies to Travis Hunter, I think Jalen probably put him up, you know, one or two in the Heisman race. I mean, what a ridiculous performance. He is just as fast, you know, and good as he is with now his arm is accurate. So he is a dual threat. You guys were giving me a little grief, and you're right. I called for him to probably be benched after the South Florida game, Texas game, back to back, just horrible. But Saban found something, and Milrow, you know, the rest of the year he played great. So he's just continuing that. And I think Kalen DeBoer has been really well connected with him, and you can see it on the field.
Milrow in one game upended the entire, I think, draft boards of all these professional draftologists who had him probably fourth quarterback coming off the board.
Yeah.
Got to be one or two now.
Well, and you pair that with what Jaden Daniels is doing with his feet as well. You know, maybe it's a renaissance again of the Lamar Jackson type quarterbacks.
At the same time, if Beck hadn't had the second half that he had in that game, he might have been a second round pick after that game.
Yeah.
Well,
hell.
I mean, the one thing I can say about the second half was I was listening to some analysis. You know, Georgia played with a sense of desperation that most offenses will not play with during a game. I mean, Kirby would have been punting if the game had been close, but they went for it five times on fourth down and converted. I mean, so essentially Georgia was playing with four downs instead of three the entire second half. And, you know, it made a difference. I mean, they converted on all those fourth downs and they were able to whittle the score down, and their defense was able to hold Alabama in the second half, unlike the first half.
Yeah.
But what just a great college football game.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it turned out it lived up to the hype. And of course it raises the question we've asked here before. Is it better to have, you know, your guts pulled out or have your, you know, your spine broken? Would you rather lose by, you know, breaking your heart or breaking your spine? So,
hey, 12 team playoff format.
I know. Yep.
No harm, no foul.
I mean,
yeah. Spine.
We'll find out what Texas has. I mean, they got some tough games ahead. They got to play Georgia in Austin, but I'm not going to be surprised to see Alabama Georgia rematch for the SEC championship in Atlanta come December.
Yeah. All right, and then there was the other game, Milk. I think you probably had one eye on Florida State, right? How do you feeling about?
Oh, I love it. It's a complete and utter dumpster fire. I mean, they got to make a quarterback. Now, I think he might be hurt. They got to make a quarterback change.
Quickly. I think his finger got hurt.
Yeah. But SMU looked great, Pope. I mean, you were there.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to wait and talk about it, but, you know, why wait? Because it's kind of a punching lasso. I was going to punch Florida State administration for filing a lawsuit to keep SMU out of the ACC and filing another lawsuit to get out of the ACC now that SMU is in. So Karma's a bitch. And that was nice. So I punch you, Florida State. But here's my lasso, and I'll try to be short. But put it in perspective, guys. I was a sophomore at SMU in fall of 1986, November 22nd at Texas Stadium, which doesn't even exist anymore, the old Cowboy Stadium. And that was the last game that SMU played in a major conference. They got smoked by Arkansas 41-0. But 38 years in the desert, not playing in a major college conference. And so we were able to finally, you know, have a game in the ACC. It was unbelievable environment. The campus, you know, was buzzing all week. When I saw the Noles on the schedule coming in beginning of the year before they just shit the bed, I was like, there's no way we're going to be able to compete with these guys. They're bigger. They're faster. They should have made the playoffs last year. You know, they're just going to roll us. I was still a little bit worried, even though Florida State had been exposed over and over again, that might happen. But SMU rose to the occasion. It was just such a cool environment. Eric Dickerson was the honorary guy there. George Bush, did the flipping of the coin for kickoff. The atmosphere was big time college football, and it felt great after 38 years to have it back on campus. So it was a good feels all the way around. And it was such a rout that a bunch of us started watching the Alabama Georgia game on our YouTube on the phones, and people were paying more attention to that towards the end of the game than Florida State replacements getting smoked.
Perfect. That's the way it should be always. I will say also to cap off college football, I was one of the more impressive wins for me, because I had for sure a blowout and we've been tough on prime. I'm pretty shocked that Colorado won the way they did against, I thought UCF was a very good team.
They put it all together. I watched that game.
And I'm coming more and more around to Sanders being a pretty damn good quarterback. We'll see what happens.
That guy is like the Arch Manning of college football. He gets hit every time he drops back to pass.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's a good player. So that was good. And then the best thing that happened all weekend was Ole Miss losing. Because if you're a Gator fan, you kind of want Lane to lose a couple games. Nothing too crazy.
That's part of your master plan.
Yes, I'm okay with
you. You want him to feel like a little heat, like that maybe his welcome's been worn out there and it's time to move on before it's shit.
Or like, am I really gonna ever win a national championship here? I
mean, yeah, probably not, right?
Ole Miss, right? So
yeah,
maybe
it makes sense.
You don't want him to lose like seven games, because then he might be like a bad coach. But
right.
One's okay. It was good.
If he loses seven, then you'll definitely sign him at Florida. You guys like shit coaches. So
yeah.
All right. Anything else on college? All right, Pope. I think we did your punch. Does anybody else have?
We did my punch and my lasso.
Well, that was out of order. Anybody else have a punch?
That's gonna editing's gonna have a field day with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've got a lasso. A little bit of a homer one, but still a good story nonetheless. Stone Garrett, kind of a fringe outfielder for the Nats, played a little bit last year. By the way, this is a guy whose name was perfect for him. He looks like a middle linebacker. I mean, the guy is enormous and just all muscle. But last year on August 23rd, he ran back, you know, to make a play against the wall and broke his leg. Really a bad injury, you know, carted off and had to fight his way back, rehab all year. And they brought him up for the last series back to the majors. He wasn't really planning on it. He said he had no idea that they were going to do it. But one of the regular Nats guys went on the paternity list. So they brought Garrett up, and he went in his first at bat after coming back from this horrific, you know, broken leg. He hits a home run, goes 3-for-4 on the day. Gets the Gatorade bath after the game, and then totally just breaks down. talking about how his mom came and lived with him for 3 weeks and you know, made sure he had meals because he thought, you know, he was going to go home from surgery. He had no idea how much pain he was going to be in. And just a good story about a guy coming back and having that moment. If you watch the video, you can see just raw emotion when the ball, when he hits the home run to lead off in the bottom of the first inning. So good story for a guy who had to work his way back and had a big moment. So good for Stone Garrett. That's my lasso. Anybody else have a lasso? All right. How about a buzzer beater?
I've got one.
All right.
So early in the year, we featured some young, relatively unknown major league pitchers. And one of the ones we talked about was Tarik Skubal, who pitches for the Tigers and never once let up from that episode where we were just in awe of his ERA. He wound up winning 18 games, finished the year with an ERA of 2.39 and struck out 228 batters and won the triple crown. That's because he led the AL in all three of those categories. So hats off to Scooter.
Wow.
What a great wow. year. In this day and age, win 18 games. That's a lot. It's like winning 25 in the 70s.
That's wild. Yeah. Yeah. You just don't see that anymore. All right. Who else has a buzzer beater? Well, I got one, and I'm not going to say his name right because I don't think I've ever gotten it right, but Luis Arraez, did I get close? No? Okay. Well, he is the first player in Major League history to win three consecutive batting titles with three different teams. So that's pretty wild to bounce around like that and not have it affect you and be the batting champ 3 years in a row. So that was my buzzer beater.
Can you guys name another player who won it with two different teams?
He's probably a Yankee.
Yes, always.
DJ
I don't know.
LeMahieu.
Oh, did he? He did. He won with Minnesota and the Yankees.
Either that or Toronto and the Yankees. I forget which.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. It had to be a Yankee. You knew that. Any other buzzer beaters?
We should probably wish the U.S. congrats on winning the President's Cup. So,
yeah, and they made it interesting by losing all their matches the second day. But
and a lot of drama, too. Like a lot of shit-talking, a lot of, you know, a lot of incidents outside the ropes, right? I mean, it was kind of a wild weekend.
Canadian fans were wild.
Yeah.
They got out of control. Hey,
yeah.
They were like,
yeah, I mean, come on, Moose, got to control your fans.
All right. Well, before we go, we got to pour one out this today. And this is a sad one. I didn't even know this was out there, but Dikembe Mutombo at age 58 died today. And, you know, Mutombo's got pretty wild story where he came from. It was then the Democratic Republic of, it's now the Democratic Republic of Congo. It was Zaire at the time. He spoke nine languages and English was not necessarily one of them. When he got to the U.S., he came to Georgetown where John Thompson took him under his wing like he did so many big men and turned him into, he actually played club or intramural hoops his freshman year because he had never played basketball. Before didn't really know anything about basketball.
I'll take the tall guy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he went on and he had 12 blocks in one Big East game. He was the fourth pick in the 91 draft by the Nuggets. He played for the Hawks, the Sixers. He was, I think he won.
Knicks.
I think did he play for the Knicks?
Yep.
He did. I think how many defensive player of the years did he win? I think it was four.
Yeah.
And you know, also on the NBA All 75 team, Hall of Famer, and really known at the end of the day for a lot of his international humanitarian aid work that he did too, and built schools and hospitals in different countries. He was a two-time recipient of the Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award that the NBA gives out. So,
and he was funny.
Great yeah. guy, great sense of humor, great booming voice.
Did you mention that he's the second leading rebounder in NBA history?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, behind Olajuwon.
And just on a personal note, I remember being a freshman at Georgetown and school hadn't even started yet. We were having a baseball practice and I was in the training room and I was sitting on a table and to my left was Patrick Ewing and to my right was Dikembe. And then talking to them was Alonzo standing there. And I was like the guy in the middle of this triangle guys talking. And so, you know, Mutombo was that booming voice will not be forgotten. Nor will the finger wag. So really a big loss and a young man.
How did he pass?
Well, did they say brain
cancer.
Brain cancer.
And do we actually know what his age was?
Well, that's a good question. that's a fair question.
Dad at 58 or 61.
Or 61. Yeah, it could be something like that. That's a fair question.
I think to honor Mount Mutombo, we all ought to do our best finger wag impersonation.
No. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Everyone have a good week. All right, thanks.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay,
And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.